This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, James E. Hedebo about to be in the building. Super Bowl champ. You got to think he gets excited this time of the year.
Those memories never go away.
They never go away. And when you're still in game shape, you can at least convince yourself for a few seconds that you could go out there and make a tackle. You know?
He could.
He could.
A lot of these guys can still make a couple plays. Play a quarter, maybe.
Man, like, when it comes to 10-year NFL careers, like, James had a good career. He played for a lot of organizations, but just as far as, like, the experiences that you have, it's hard to have better experiences.
Well, how about the people he played with?
I mean, you played with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, Terrell Suggs, won
Tom
a Super
Brady.
Bowl. Won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Went undefeated with the Patriots and then lost in the Super Bowl. You play with the Jets with Rex Ryan, upset the Patriots, and then had another upset. You are a member of three of the 11 teams that have won on the road in the divisional round. And oh, by the way, you got that bling. And even more impressive than all that, screw Tom Brady, screw Bill Belichick, screw Ray Lewis, screw Terrell Suggs, screw Ed Reed. He played with Aaron Hernandez, which to me is much more interesting.
Oh, yeah, he did, didn't he?
Than any of the previous things. So James E. Hedebo might be the only guy that's played with two murders, Ray Lewis and Aaron. I'm just kidding. Aaron Hernandez.
Are you?
Yeah, kind of. But we watched that. Have you seen the documentary yet? You have not, have you?
No, I recorded it. Well, I know it.
You recorded
it
on Netflix?
On Netflix. I know I have it.
You recorded it.
I corrected myself. I know I have it, but I haven't watched it yet.
It's only 3 hours. That's a good thing. You know, sometimes when you have to watch these, they're 8 hours. This one was only three, and it was about the life of Aaron Hernandez, the murder trials, the upbringings, all that type of stuff, and everything that happened, you know, along the way. I thought it was very interesting. I think most people have seen it. It's basically got the internet going nuts. So I enjoyed it, and I'm going to enjoy getting James E. Hedebo's perspective when he walks in the building right here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Justin Reed, the uplifting one, the loophole.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Reed, friend of the show. He played last season with a torn labrum. I think he deserves a lot of credit for doing that. You talk about J.J. Watt coming back after tearing the pec. See, I didn't say boob there.
Yes,
doing
very good.
A little bit of a favor. Justin Reed going out there with the torn labrum. This guy deserves a lot of credit because if you look at the stuff that he did, the tackle of Leonard Fournette in week two and then forcing the ball out of the hands of the Tennessee receiver on the road in Tennessee that Whitney Mercilus ended up catching and taking deep inside Titans territory.
Yeah.
I don't know where this team would have been without Justin Reed. And the fact that he played good with the torn labrum,
mm-hmm.
I mean – You really got to look at Justin Reed and think that this guy has got a – we already thought he had a bright future. Some people, before they knew the labrum thing, were a little bit critical of Justin Reed because he had some low moments. But when you put in perspective
well, we
and you look back and know that
because
he kept walking off
weeks.
The field.
Yeah.
But when you look at it now,
mm-hmm.
knowing what you know, I think you got to think that this is probably even more impressive than if he had been fully healthy and gone out there and been a
Pro
Bowl type player.
Absolutely it is. I mean, his stock just rises like, what, twofold, threefold, whatever it is. I think for everybody who's watched this team, because I think also, I mean, he's proved that even just in his second year, I mean, this guy's a leader. I mean, this guy gets it done on the field. He's a leader off the field, and then he's a leader by example with playing with that torn labrum. I mean, it's really impressive to think about just how good he can get. If you think about the three biggest, maybe I'm missing something, so help me out, you and Figgy. When I think about the three biggest highlight moment, big plays of the regular season, I think of Deshaun Watson against the Bears. I mean, the Raiders.
Bears.
Against the Raiders. That got kicked in the eye.
Yeah.
And then two Justin Reed plays. The Jacksonville stop of Fournette and the led to the interception of for Whitney Merciless.
The biggest plays for me were the read tackle of Fournette.
That one.
The Justin Reed, and this isn't in order, the Justin Reed play that led to the Merciless interception.
Mm-hmm.
The Bernardrick McKinney fumble recovery in Kansas City in the first
in
one.
In the regular season.
Yeah, in the regular season at the end of the second quarter. Yeah. Deshaun's play against the Buffalo Bills where he spun out. And then I'm also gonna put the 3rd and 18 to Duke Johnson on that same drive that led to the Deshaun play where Duke Johnson somehow moved the chains for the Texans in that round. Yeah, I mean that's the Deshaun play still though. So I guess you could call it a package play with Deshaun spinning out and getting it to Taiwan. But bottom line is Justin Reed was a part of both of those, and you got to think his best football is ahead of him. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask this though: how many guys on this Texans roster do you think have their best football ahead of them?
Whew.
That's something I think you got to look at. When you talk about a bright future and whatnot, I think you got to look at a roster and wonder, like, whose best football is ahead of him? The guys that immediately come to mind.
We could do a whole show on that.
I would say Deshaun Watson is one.
No, let me mention a name.
Okay.
And you say yes or no.
If his best football is ahead of him. Now, if he's still going to be
just
as good.
I'm just going to go with starters on both sides of the ball.
If he's going to be, keep in mind that if he's going to be just as good and not better, that does not mean that his best football is ahead of him.
Right.
So when we say DeAndre Hopkins and we say no, it doesn't mean he's not going to still be one of the best in the game. It just means that his best football might not be ahead of him.
You want to start on offense or defense?
Offense, man. The chicks love the offense.
The chicks dig the offense.
They like the D2, but they like the offense more.
Well, I'm glad they do. All right. DeAndre Hopkins.
No.
Kenny Stills.
No.
No, he might be the same. Will Fuller.
Whew.
That's a tough one.
No.
Can I assume health? I don't think I can.
Hell no,
I don't think
you
I can.
Can't assume health.
I can't
what
assume health.
What are you talking about,
no,
man?
No, I don't think so. I'll agree. I'm agreeing with you on all three of those. Laremy Tunsil. Yes for me.
Sure.
Yeah, yes for me. Max Sharping.
Absolutely.
Nick Martin.
Yes.
Who was the other guard? Zach Fulton? No.
Gone.
Yeah.
Titus Howard. Yes. 4 out of 5 offensive linemen.
How about that?
4 out of 5 offensive linemen.
That's pretty dang impressive. Let's do the offense, and then we'll get James in here because I know we have some conversation with him. Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, his best football's ahead of him for sure.
Has Darren Fells.
No.
Duke Johnson.
Yes.
And Carlos Hyde.
No, I don't even think he's going to be a Texan next year.
So the line, that's good news. The line and Deshaun.
The line, that's good. Mm-hmm. The offensive line was improved this year.
We'll do defense later.
We'll see. Hopefully it starts paying off, you know, in the statistics. But to each his own. Jamesy Hedebo in the building.
How's
here.
It going, man?
Previously
Fellas,
mentioned.
How's it going?
He's got his denim going. He's looking
going
sharp,
well. He's got
James.
The denim, let me see. He's been hiding
see
over
guys.
There. Yeah.
It's his favorite level in Mario Brothers. denim. denim. James, when you hear that Justin Reed played the entire season with a torn labrum, as a former safety in the NFL, what's your reaction to that?
I've done that.
You know, really?
Yeah. It's
way to minimize it.
It's more common.
Just a torn labrum.
No, but believe it or not, it's more common.
This is the perspective we need.
We need this.
Yeah, it's more common than you would think, because with a torn labrum, and especially at the safety position, what it doesn't allow your arm to do is to go backwards. So like that. You know, butterfly stretch, so to speak.
Right.
So if you can be able to, with the training staff, stabilize your elbow, your shoulder, so it's restricted to its movement. And that's why he wore that brace for most of the season. Anything other than
that's why he was in and out of games occasionally.
Exactly. Well,
because he would aggravate it.
Yeah. Well, what it also does is, so there's two parts to it. So you can't move it. You know, you can't flex it back. So they have to stabilize that. But it's not going to take away the fact that it's still loose. So you'll get stingers and, you know, and nerves and all that other stuff, which is
Does your hand go numb or
exactly?
Is it...
So I'll tell you about, you know, a story about that. But on the other side, you're able to play with it because you can still punch, you can still do everything you need to do as a defensive back, tackle,
right.
And so forth. You just cannot extend that arm, and if you do in any way, it's going to put you down. It's excruciating pain, and so then you couple that with, you know, stingers because, you know, from your shoulder all the way up through your neck. That's, you know, it's the same nerve. And, you know, I played my
– What year was it?
With the New England Patriots. Okay. And I had, I mean, torn rotator cuff, partially torn labrum. And I went for a hit in playing the Washington Redskins and just landed the wrong way. It got flexed back, and it literally felt like I was screaming on the ground. It felt like, you know, it was the worst pain ever.
You're so soft.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so, but you go out for, you know, and you get the shooting pain. It's numb all the way to your fingers, and it's like literally someone lights a match under your skin, and it burns. It's excruciating.
Well, the reason I was asking, because I was driving home yesterday, and I realized not only did they call, and we talked about this last week, but I want to get your thoughts as someone who has been in Justin Reed's position in terms of a torn labrum. It freaked me out, and I got a little even more upset than I was about the fake punt, because they gave the ball to a guy with a torn labrum to carry the ball. I mean, you talk about defensively. And
he's shaking his head.
And a couple of people, well, let me lay it out a little bit more and then get your reaction. Because a couple of people said, well, nothing wrong with his legs. And I'm like, and Landry brought up, if you're a ball carrier versus a defensive guy, whole different ball game, because you're stiff arming. You might have that numbness. It's easier to fumble. It could have been a scoop and score. You're also in pain. I mean, who knows your confidence running the ball? You're taking a hit, not delivering a hit. What were your thoughts now that you know the guy that they not only had an ill-advised fake punt, but they gave the ball to a guy that had a torn labrum?
I mean, it's I already said it's foolishness. It's the one of the worst coaching decisions that I've seen all of this entire season of football. Terrible. One of the worst coaching decisions. And the thing that makes me even worse, that makes it even worse, is no one is taking accountability of it as it being a bad decision. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, it's like, you know, hey, well, we had the look we wanted. We'll run it, you know, we'll run it again. Oh, just arrogance. But to say the least, when you have a torn labrum, you already lose much muscle atrophy. So your arm's weaker. So even if he is holding the ball in the opposite hand, he can't stiff arm. He can't do anything to push off and extend that arm in a straight or flexed manner to escape that tackle. So, I mean, talk about not knowing your personnel, you know, as a coach.
And Tywin Jones was on the field. I don't know if he was on the field that one, but he's been on the field on punts.
Just don't fake punt. They should never have run the
fake
punt.
Exactly. I'm just saying. No, I agree
with you.
You're
better off just putting your offense out there.
I agree with you 100%. I'm just saying if they're going to do it. I want to rewatch. I'm going to do it during the break. Rewatch the fake punt and see if he, and with James, see if he actually ran like a guy whose shoulder he couldn't extend.
I mean, he couldn't break the tackle.
Well, I know.
You also understand, I mean, you know, you're on that field, you got Tortall, you got all, you know, you're all juiced up, you got all types of stuff that, you know, you don't feel pain. So
funny you mention that, because Aaron Hernandez talked about in his documentary. I want to talk to you about that documentary because it's been, I was fascinated by it. I watched it. I enjoyed it. So let's talk to Jamesy Hedebo, who was actually on Aaron Hernandez's team. You know the scene they showed about 20 times where he scores a touchdown in the Super Bowl, makes it rain? Jamesy Hedebo was a member of that squad. We're going to talk to him about the Netflix doc and what it was like being a teammate with Aaron Hernandez. That's next.
Two receivers right. Brady gets the snap, looking to his left, fires that way. Got a man, Hernandez, he's in, touchdown New England. Brady, quick throw left side, wide open, Hernandez, nobody on him, touchdown. Brady worked quickly because nobody was covering Hernandez, and Hernandez has his second touchdown catch of the night. Two receivers right. Brady gets the snap, looking to his left, fires that way. Got a man, Hernandez, he's in, touchdown New England.
Three times, Mark Vandermeer called a touchdown for former Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez. Of course, you know about Aaron Hernandez by now, the Netflix documentary. I think it's the highest rated documentary they've had on Netflix, which is saying something,
man. There's some good documentaries on there. Mm-hmm.
Jamesy Hedebo in the building. He is with us every Thursday. He was teammates with Aaron Hernandez back in New England. We just want to talk to you about your thoughts on the documentary and what it was like playing with Aaron Hernandez. But before we do, tell us what he was known as in the locker room in New England.
Before I even go there, can I just
go wherever you want.
Can I just say this one thing? Mm-hmm. After watching that documentary, it reminded me of so many things about Aaron Hernandez in terms of his athleticism. And I would argue this point that if he stayed out of trouble and he was still in the NFL today, he would be a far better tight end than Rob Gronkowski and Travis Kelce.
People were saying it back then.
Yeah, he would be the guy. Like, wide receiver speed, you know, running back, you know,
moves,
fullback moves, agility, so to speak.
Size,
strength, endurance. I mean,
I remember those discussions were being had.
Phenomenal.
You know, like
phenomenal.
Hernandez is better than Gronk. Yeah. You know, or he's going to be better than Gronk. You know,
I remember that game. I forgot who we were playing, but We had so many running backs injured.
I want to say it was the Ravens or something.
Yeah, we had so many running backs hurt that week. I mean, everybody was out. And Bill's like, we're going to put Aaron at running back. And this guy runs for 77 yards off of like six carries and then has another buck something catching and a TD receiving. Like, just a freak athlete. Mm-hmm. Just, yeah. So I'll say that. But then, you know, him as a teammate, we called him Chico. That was his, his nickname. And, I kind of posted that on Instagram. I knew Aaron different than just a teammate. So Aaron's cousin, Davina, went to college at UMass with me.
Oh, wow.
So I knew her and I knew Aaron.
So you knew him back then?
I knew him back then. So he even, visited UMass. He was only at, in Connecticut. So we knew each other back then. And I didn't know him as like this, all athlete.
Yeah.
I just knew him as, hey, that's Davina's cousin. Like, you guys better not talk to Davina or, she'll get her cousin. So, but, for him as a teammate, I mean, he was a great guy. Mm-hmm. He was honestly what you wanted as a teammate. For me, I like the guys that have, a chip on their shoulder. He came from the suburbs, but he fronted as if he came from, the inner city, and that was because of the people he hung around with.
Sure, sure.
There was a time we went out, and I think it was after winning the AFC championship or something, and we're in a club, everyone's, having a good time, and I look over at, Aaron Hernandez's table, and I'm like, all the team is together, like, celebrating. And I'm like, Aaron Hernandez, I'm like, who are those guys? Like, he's just with some goons, like some guys that you really just, you don't want to bump into, like, or
you
just mess with.
You can tell by looking at them. Yeah.
But, you mind your own business. It's not like, oh, they're doing anything criminal. It's just like.
It's like, I don't want to hang out with those guys tonight.
Those are his hometown friends. So that's what you kind of just took it as. And you just said, okay, that's his crew. And you leave it at that. But
yeah.
It didn't affect his competitive nature, who he was as a teammate, the guy that he was on the field. Even, believe it or not, we had team Bible studies, and he would come to the team Bible studies.
Mm-hmm.
He would share. He would be a part of it. For the Netflix to paint this image of him as this just like eerie mystery man that's just so evil and, consumed with so much anger and fire, you don't see that. I never saw it.
So you never saw that. That was one thing that you thought was strange with the documentary. Was there anything else that kind of stuck out that you were like, I don't know about all this?
I didn't like the fact that they used his, potential sexuality as that's the reason that he snapped and went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like that has absolutely nothing to do with the entire story. So for me, you would never known. Like, it's not like he acted a certain way or said certain. That wasn't even anything about who he was as a player or a person.
Right.
So for them to take that in the documentary and be like, this is the defining factor of what he was battling, and that's what led him to snap and do all this stuff, I think it's bogus.
Well, we all know there's a lot of players that are homosexual in the NFL anyway. In every locker room.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this, because you saw another side of Aaron Hernandez. You saw him before he was Aaron Hernandez, But how much of that documentary and the stories that are out there did you kind of have an idea about?
I think to think you had an idea about, I mean, worst case scenario, you would say, okay, maybe the guy, sells a little bit of weed. As a teammate, you're probably like,
And that doesn't make him unique either.
And that doesn't make him unique either. I mean, that's something that a lot of guys do in the NFL is they smoke weed. I mean,
yeah.
They do it in the NBA. They do it in every sport.
Sure.
There's owners that probably, that do it. So it's not, it's not something, a mystery to anybody, but that's something that you could probably say as a player is, okay, he dabbled in that. And but for me, what are you doing on Sunday? When you step on that field, what are you doing?
And balling.
And he balled out every single week. So all that stuff was kind of washed under the bridge. And I think for the New England Patriots, they treated it the same exact way. They're like, this guy is our cash cow. He's selling jerseys. He's a beast. We got him for a steal pick in the fourth round, or and he's a first round talent. We put him in our environment. We put him around our culture and our guys.
Right.
I mean,
problem solved.
Problem solved. Why Why wouldn't he perform?
On under the dock, as far as like the sexuality thing, I'm sure that if that were the case, if he were hiding that would probably be something that would be very hard. But I just didn't feel like there was much evidence on that. Like the former teammate and the dad rubbed me the wrong way.
It seemed like they had something to gain the whole time. I mean, like, why wouldn't you come out and say something while he was playing in the league so he could defend himself?
They seem like they want to write a book or something, some sort of clout chasing, because you know, there's proof of the CTE, there's proof of all the other stuff. There's proof of his upbringing with his family, but the homosexuality stuff, not to minimize how that would be, but it's some former quarterback and his dad saying that they didn't even talk about it until after he killed himself.
And then his son came out, that seemed a little bit weird.
It seemed
like they were chasing something down there. But nonetheless, I mean, for him, as you know, I think one thing that jumped out to me in just being around was the maturity level. He was immature, and he was just young, and you can't take.
He was
take
20
that.
When he came in the league.
When he came into the NFL, so you're making millions of dollars. You're 20 years old. You're an hour and a half at most away from where you grew up. I mean, it's a combination for some immature, stupid stuff to happen. Now, do I personally think that he is a murderer? I don't. Do I think
really?
That he, hold on, let me finish this. Do I think that he hung around and hung around murderers and people that? Like, he wanted to be looked at and villainized as a certain way? Yes, I do. Yes, I do think he is. He hung around with some...
I mean, you just talked about it.
People that you wouldn't want to... But those are people that he felt that he fit, you know? Mm-hmm. He wanted to be the outlier. He wanted to be the guy that was, you know, kind of like, you know, the outcast. Look at... But that's not his upbringing. I mean, he grew up in the burbs. I mean, you know, I knew the people that, you know, he grew up in.
He went to college with his cousin, so, et cetera.
It was like he was chasing something that ended up biting him in the butt, and it did.
He's one of the dumbest guys that I've ever seen as far as you deleted a certain amount. And I'm not condoning getting away with murder or not.
But that's something that.
I mean, if he would have just deleted all of his surveillance stuff.
He would be playing football.
Maybe
right
not leave bullets in the rental car.
Yeah.
That would probably be good. And maybe get rid of the car regardless of what happened. I mean, good gosh.
How much of once it happened, what was your reaction once you saw – you know, him in that T-shirt with the handcuffs and everything. That's a very vivid image.
It was kind of a sense of, like, you know, unbelief. Like, you know, they got the wrong guy. Like, this isn't, you know, this isn't right. I mean, should he have gone to jail? Yes. He played a part in the death of another individual. I mean, and one thing that you'll see in the documentary that, you know, it shows you kind of the cold side of him is after it happens, the night after it happens, they had showed video surveillance of him in, you know, his man cave with the other two guys.
Yeah, just chilling.
And he's just chilling, dapping them up and all that stuff. Like
Letting him hold his baby.
Mm-hmm. So it was a sense of, like, I'm just at peace with the situation. And then, I mean, to say that Olden Lloyd knew something about his sexuality, that's why they killed him. Come on. Like,
there's no proof of that.
Just searching for stuff. So, and so I just think it was a series of stupid decisions around stupid people. You know, and it cost him not only his life, his career, the life of another individual, and his family. So,
what, did you ever reach out or have contact with him after the initial events that sent him?
No way.
Hell no.
I didn't know if there was any investigating me for anything. No, I didn't know if there was any, like, you know, when once he went before he committed suicide. And
everybody, when you're in a situation where you're on trial for a murder. Everybody washes their hands clean. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants
except
any
the pouncies.
Except the pouncies.
Which, by the way, my theory is, I feel like they were part of him trying to keep it real, like, type thing when he went to Florida. I mean, that was who he ran with, and you heard the way they were talking. Yeah. You could hear the way he talked when he was talking with them and stuff like that.
But can we just say this? Mm-hmm. Shame on college football for the environments that they create for these young men. Like, just flat out. They can get away with murder.
Urban Meyer, dude.
I was at UMass and we did some dumb stuff and it was covered up, but nothing to the magnitude of, you know, Florida and all these different universities, and they just put their hands back like, oh, we had no idea that any of this was going on. Give me a break.
And honestly, that's a lot of times, and I think people have said it, where if he gets away with it one time and there was the alleged club incident that just went away, if he would have gotten in trouble right then, maybe the rest of the stuff doesn't happen. You know what I mean? When you enable these kids when they're in college.
It's like, it was insane. I think there was a picture. I'm trying to look at it. I was like, I think I texted too. There needs to be a 30 for 30 on the 2008 Florida Gators. They had Aaron Hernandez, Cam Newton, Tim Tebow, Riley Cooper, Janoris Jenkins, Percy Harvins, the Pouncey brothers. I mean, like, it's ridiculous. The amount
what was that locker room like?
Exactly. The amount of characters and people that you have on a team under, you know, with Urban Meyer as the head coach.
Tebow must have been going, what am I doing here?
Well, supposedly they made Hernandez live with him on the road.
Yeah, I heard of that.
You know, so it's like, so even that alone is guilt in terms of knowing that there's off-the-field things that are going on.
So you're trying to...
That you put him with Tim Tebow on the road for him not to be getting any trouble. So, I mean, yeah, it's insane.
That's James E. Hedebo, former teammate of Aaron Hernandez, talking about what it was like to be the teammate of the guy that is the feature in one of the most popular Netflix docs of all time. John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you, Sports Radio 610. Let's talk about the stuff that happened on Sunday on the field. Championship Sunday was eventful, to say the very least. We're going to talk about what James thinks is going to happen in the big game. John Lopez also has some data for him, and he is going to hear the fake mic'd up audio of Bill O'Brien during the decision to kick the field goal on 4th and 1. That's next. All right. Before the end of the segment, we're going to give you a chance to win a pair of tickets to see Nickelback September 4th at the Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion. Tickets are available at LiveNation.com. Live Nation always hooking people up with some of the best experiences around H-Town. James, what was your biggest takeaway from what happened Sunday? San Francisco advances to the Super Bowl, as do the Kansas City Chiefs. Your takeaway on the game that's going to take place is 2 Sundays from now.
With the San Francisco 49ers, they remind me a lot of the championship team that with Eli's first championship, New York Giants, with just their ability to rush four with their defensive line, and they play with an attitude, that front four, and then playing multiple coverages behind it, and then their ability to just run the football. I mean, it was like run,
right?
You know, just attitude and demeanor. So I definitely like what San Francisco does, and their receivers also have the speed to match, you know, Kansas City's speed. So, and then on the other end, Kansas City playing Tennessee. I mean, Tannehill, we knew that if, you know, Kansas City gets up, Tannehill in that offense does not have what it takes to, you know, put up points quick. They're just not built that way. And so that was kind of what we expected. I expected that. I expected a big, you know, big win for Kansas City. And here we have it, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, 2 years removed from New England, playing in the Super Bowl against Pat Mahomes, who's, you know, two years in the NFL as a starter.
Right.
1 year goes to AFC Championship. Next year wins the AFC Championship. Now in the Super Bowl. So it looks like these two, and I would even throw Deshaun Watson, post Bill O'Brien, and then I'll throw in. You know, Lamar Jackson in that mix, as well as, you know, these guys are going to be the next ones.
Sure.
We've
talked about that. I agree.
This thing.
You know, what's funny to me about the Niners is they really haven't changed that much their roster. I mean, over the last 2 years, from 4-12 to the Super Bowl, they got, obviously, you know,
they added Bosa.
Bosa is huge.
Quan Alexander.
But they got the Mostert is just a guy, but, you know.
But honestly, it's, I mean, coaching. Isn't that a testament to coaching?
Yes.
And just building you guys up through the draft?
Yeah.
I mean, just, like, that's why you have all these, you know, so-called experts in your front office that do the analyticals and study these guys and see what they can add to your team, because once they get there, you expect them to do that exact
thing.
They've
just gotten better,
and they're better coached. And you're right, they're better coached.
A side note real quick before we move on to the other game.
James E. Hedebo, by the way, Super Bowl champ, with us for his weekly visit.
How happy are you that Eli Manning's retiring? I know he brought some bad memories for you.
You know,
lost the Super Bowl to him.
Yeah, I definitely lost the Super Bowl to him on, you know, a third and 20.
Oh.
And just ridiculous. Backed up on their 15-yard line. It's the game's over. The game's over. So
were y'all thinking that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so we get the stop, and we're, you know, they have to punt because they're so far backed up, and there's 3 minutes left in the game.
And then just kill the clock, we're done.
Yeah, three minutes left in the game with Tom Brady. I mean, you're going to get at least 3 points or, you know, mm-hmm. a touchdown. We're up four. So, yeah, so he's retired. But, I mean, nonetheless, he's had a heck of a career. We have to give him credit. I mean, despite the mm-hmm. tail end of his career that's been, you know, somewhat of, you know, coaching,
right.
you know, shuffle, offensive coordinator shuffle, talent shuffle, all of that. I mean, prior to that, Eli's, you know, pretty much had a stellar career.
He's a first ballot Hall of Famer to you?
No.
No.
You think he's got to wait a little bit?
I think he has to wait a bit. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I agree, but yeah, I just don't know if it's going to work out that way.
I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
A New York type thing. You don't think he's a Hall of Famer at all, John?
He has to be a Hall of Famer. Has to be.
Here's how I describe Eli Manning. He's clutch. But he's not great, and there's a big difference.
I would argue that. I mean, he's been clutch twice.
That's my point. Well, but he's been clutch. I mean, he's been clutch over. I can't name the games and the dates, but I'm saying he's made some big drives for that team. I mean, they got to those Super Bowls first of all, so you can't get there without him, the quarterback, making some plays.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not great. He's really good. He's in the Hall of really good. But I think the, I think what you describe him as but is he's clutch. He's not great.
But I think the defining factor of greatness is being great when you need to be.
No,
great.
I get it. It's a good argument.
And he's done that. He could play a crappy first two quarters and then come out in the third and fourth and light you up for 300 yards and 4 TDs and win the game. You don't say, oh, man, like, that's not a great performance. It's a great performance.
Look, I know sometimes there are opinions that you just feel are wrong. I don't feel your opinion is wrong.
Yeah.
It's just not mine.
Yeah,
I just think he's a clutch player, and he's very good, but he's not a Hall of Fame player.
All right.
The OG John mm-hmm. Lopez, Landry Locker, James E. Hedebo, Figgy Fig with you, Sports Radio 610. Did you know Bill O'Brien's one of the top 10 longest tenured coaches in the NFL?
Wow.
I did not know this. John Lopez has actually done some research on this.
Let me lay some numbers on you.
That is surprising. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
So top 10 coaches – in terms of tenure, as of today, after firings in 2019 and everything else, Bill Belichick,
mm-hmm.
Sean Payton.
Wait, hold on. Wait, start from the top.
Bill Belichick.
Super Bowl.
Sean Payton.
Super Bowl.
Mike Tomlin.
Super Bowl.
John Harbaugh.
Super Bowl.
Pete Carroll.
Super Bowl.
Andy Reid.
Super Bowl.
Mike Zimmer. Conference Finals.
Yeah.
Dan Quinn.
Super Bowl.
Super Bowl. Doug Peterson.
Super Bowl.
And Bill O'Brien.
Womp, womp, womp.
Let me frame it for you this way and then get your reaction.
So you have to ask the question, why?
Listen to this. Six of the longest tenured coaches, of the 10 longest tenured coaches in the NFL, have won Super Bowls. Eight have been to the Super Bowl. Nine have been to the conference championship game. One has done none of the above.
You're breaking the hearts of our listeners right now.
I know, but I mean,
men are crying in their cars or wherever they're listening from.
Dude, like,
for me, I've said it. It's nothing personal against Bill O'Brien. I love the guy mm-hmm. personally. I love Bill O'Brien. Mm-hmm. He's a great dude.
You've been around him?
I've been around him. Great guy, but as a head coach, he's awful. It's not, you know, subjective. This is analytics.
Yeah.
This is what does the data say?
Well, there's some right there.
Stick the data up there and let's read what the data says.
Well, I mean, there's two coaches in the division that have been to the AFC Championship that have been there, you know, shorter than him. Because I almost think it's unfair to mention the Belichicks and all that type of stuff, but Mike Vrabel's been there and so has Doug Marrone. And they've been there least time than him. So I don't know. I mean, you say he's not a good head coach. He's obviously been able to keep a job as long as most guys, 22 other coaches in the NFL,
people,
23.
And people say the craziest things like, oh, there's injuries and blah, blah, blah.
That's every team.
It's every team in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Green Bay made it to the Super Bowl 1 year, and I think they had 14 starters on IR, with Mike McCarthy. I'm like, what does it matter that it's 100% injury rate when you play the NFL. That's expected.
The apex of the energy around the Houston Texans, of excitement around the Houston Texans, the theme, the NFL Films theme of that 2011 season was next man up. The Texans, when they got to their best season they've had, most people would recognize under Kubiak, was they were losing guys left and Mike Brazel played with a broken ankle. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, guys were falling left and right. The whole theme was next man up. So teams get injured and teams succeed despite the injuries all the time.
Yeah, and so for that being his scapegoat, for reason to continue to re-up and rather than having, you know, a stern, you know, expectation of this, we need to have an AFC Championship Super Bowl run or you're out of here, period. Mm-hmm. Another example is, you know, even Jim Caldwell, right? When he was with the Detroit Lions, he took us to the playoffs. The first time that the Lions have been to the playoffs in years, mm-hmm. made it to the playoffs. The following year, we had a 7-9 season or whatever it may be. The next year, we dropped to 4-something. Boom, he's gone.
Yeah.
I don't even want to hear year 4 in terms of what you can do with a healthy team. And it's an expectation of win now or not. You put that expectation on your players, mm-hmm. and often you do see it on your coaches throughout, you know, successful organizations in the NFL. But then when it comes to the Texans, mm-hmm. it's like, matter of fact, we're not winning to the level that we want, but let's give him more responsibility in terms of his reins in the organization.
It just seems like to me, it seems like kind of a problem when you say, well, he got this far and you compare it to other short years. Like he got to the second round of the playoffs and they had the Kansas City Chiefs against the rope as validation for there's improvement. Because if everybody had that mindset, just think about this, James. What is the crappiest organization in the entire NFL the last 2 decades? What's the laughingstock of the NFL, if you had to guess?
Cleveland Browns.
Thank you very much. You could make a case that this year the Cleveland Browns, they actually did better than they have most of the time. So if the Cleveland Browns, who have been a joke, a disaster, can look at that and say, you know what, we're going to get rid of our GM and our coach after 1 year, regardless of how much more improvement we can make a case for this last 2 years.
Yep.
If they're willing to do it, then what? You know, it kind of confuses you when you look at this and you discuss this and you talk about this data.
Yeah, and you're talking about their talent level that they have on that team. I mean, here you have it is you have, you know, the opportunity, Kareem. You have Kareem Hunt now for, you know, full year.
Yeah.
You know, with no suspensions, you have, you know, Baker Mayfield, you have Odell Beckham, you have all these weapons, and they're like, I don't care who we have. We need to clean house and start mm-hmm. new and bring a new energy in because the culture that's here, we don't like it. And so you have to ask as an owner, the culture that the Texans have as that'll do,
mm-hmm.
is that the culture that's going to take to win a championship?
Well, I think the other thing that factors in, not to make a Houston-Cleveland comparison, because let's be real, Houston has had more success than them. But I think the fact that Cleveland has waited and waited and waited, they get less patient, you know, to finally find a connection, a head coach, whatever it is that works. The Texans are waiting and with more success. Let's make that clear. But waiting and waiting and waiting and just staying with the same guy, you know?
I mean, but you could say, like, if I'm the Cleveland Browns and I want to have this same mindset that we have here, I could say, well, Myles Garrett got suspended. It's Baker Mayfield's first year as a starter. You know, Odell Beckham had a hernia, and he was a little bit banged up. We didn't have Kareem Hunt all season, and, you know, there was some other stuff that just didn't go our way. Let's just keep it going and keep building on this progress. You could say that. That's just not how the NFL works, mm-hmm. and that's why John Lopez just laid out that list, and that's why the data's there. We'll get you to Nickelback very shortly, I can assure you. Jamesy Hedebo in the building for his weekly visit. Maybe there's just more to it when it comes to Bill O'Brien, James, because I did some investigating. Kyle Shanahan's got the internet going nuts because his mic'd up segment hit NFL Films, and it just showed how into the game he is, how in tuned he is, how much of a good feel he has for the game. I decided that I was going to give loopholes and Texans fans a perspective of what it's like following Bill O'Brien around on game day. So let's just go back to 2 Sundays ago, Kansas City Chiefs versus Houston Texans, 3rd and 9. It's 3rd and 9 at the 23-yard line. You're up 21 points. We all remember what happened. There was a timeout call before the 3rd and 9 play. There was a timeout called after that. And the fake head coach of your Houston Texans made a real decision. Here is the fake Bill O'Brien mic'd up
courtesy of our friends at NFL Films.
Big down here, third down.
Timeout! Timeout!
21 on third down and nine.
Timeout!
Timeout. Why not?
Timeout.
Deshaun, it's third and nine. Third and nine.
Redirected back.
I don't have a play on fourth. Okay, that's too far ahead. Okay, third and nine. We got a timeout here. Throw the ball to Duke.
Third down and nine at the Chiefs 21, and he dumps it off. Johnson, left side across the 15, and Johnson down to the 12-yard line.
He got it. He got it.
He's gonna have it. It appears.
He got it.
A check down to Duke, and it looks like they're gonna mark him a bit short. Let's
what?
See.
Should we challenge?
Oh,
should we challenge?
We may have to measure this.
Should we challenge?
5%.
I don't have a play.
On third down.
Timeout.
Coach O'Brien's gonna roll the dice.
I don't have a play. Timeout.
Watson's calling for the right personnel group. And we're down to 10 seconds time on the
out.
Play clock. They're not going to get this off in time.
The ball,
Tim, shut up.
Timeout.
Shut up, Tim. I don't have a play.
For a drive.
Field goal.
I'm okay.
The lead, but right
field
here,
goal.
You're in the red zone. Dre, you're at the 13-yard
field
line.
Goal.
Get it right. Now they're going to bring in Fairbairn. Here's the snap. Here's the spot. Here's
he
the
got
kick.
It.
And it's
he
good.
Got
and
it.
Fairbairn makes it a 24-0 Texans lead.
You suck too, motherfucker.
This is Texans Radio.
That's fake Bill O'Brien.
You sure that's fake?
Well, that's the thing. You know, everything that was said on that audio, Bill O'Brien said he said after the fact.
After the game at the press conference. That's why I'm wondering if that's fake. That's not the real thing. I mean, that's I just shake my head. Ladies and gentlemen that are tuned, I'm shaking my head in studio here. That's
It gets to that point, man.
13-yard line, mm-hmm. fourth and inches. I mean.
And you called the timeout.
And
the thing that bugs me is you've been in huddles. It just seems like when the timeout, and I forgot about this, but the timeout was called before third and nine. It just seems like you could tell your guys,
hey,
okay, if we get down to the one, then we're going to line up real quick and we're going to run something like that.
So a coach that knows the situation and knows a play,
right.
He would give his quarterback, say, hey, it's third and nine here. We're on the 19-yard line, mm-hmm. whatever it may be.
23.
23, and say, hey, all right, this is two down territory right here. All right, we got to put these guys away. So this is the first play we're gonna go with. Blah 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 blah, and give it to them.
Yeah.
And then boom, you're short. All right, hey, we already know.
This is the second play you already know. Yeah.
The mindset that we're going for it. So the decision when you're third down, you can be as aggressive as you want to be, but smart. And so he's smart. He dumps it down. You get, you get 8.5 yards. Well, I'm already saying, okay, coach already told me it's four down territory here.
Mm-hmm.
So we already have the mindset. So I'm ready for the next play.
And the other thing is you already killed the timeout. You said yourself after the game that you thought you got the first down. So if you're going to kill a second timeout in two plays, why not challenge
it?
Because if you did actually get it and you believe that, then you don't have to use that timeout and you don't have to make the decision, which, by the way, was going to be to kick the field goal. So you're really – maybe adding 4 points to
four
a game that you have said that you need a lot of points in.
Yeah. And then you also could even have had said, hey, get us a measurement. Even if we're not going to challenge, I want to make sure.
Now, they can deny that, but they would probably in that case, they wouldn't.
And they wouldn't because it was so close.
Yeah.
You could say, I want to measure that.
Yeah.
And then that gives you an opportunity to say,
right.
Okay, what's the best play in this situation? QB sneak, whatever you want. I mean, come on.
And the play calling thing is going to be something that's rolled over and over and over. Should I give James, now that we're all riled up, the information on the offensive coordinators that we were talking about before the show?
You could, real quick. Go ahead.
Here's something that you need to think about, too, in terms of play calling and being prepared in those type situations and Bill O'Brien taking control. As fake Bill O'Brien said, shut up, Tim. Tim Kelly. Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl and is talking about needing a new offensive coordinator, a fresh set of eyes. Something new is what he said it. On offense,
Sean McVay got
a new offensive coordinator. Matt Nagy got a new offensive coordinator. Doug Marrone got a new offensive coordinator. So guys with success that have been to the conference championship, not Nagy, but that have been to the conference championship game and Super Bowls have said they've seen their offense stagnate or whatever, hit a wall, and they've said, all right, we need a new look. We need a new play caller. We need somebody to help me with my play calls. We need a new offensive coordinator. And that's not happening here.
You know what's happening in the NFL? Is coaches are understanding that the league is changing.
Mm-hmm.
The way players are used. You're not just having one player that can just do this thing. You're using them in multiple facets. And so coaches are understanding that, man, my mind isn't transferring the way that it needs to for our offense to be successful.
Right.
So let me bring in a younger mind or someone who sees it differently so we can brainstorm together and come up with the right offense for our team. Some guys are saying that. Other guys are beating their heads against the wall and saying, this is going to work. This year it's going to work.
This time it'll work.
This motion is going to work. This reverse double reverse pass is going to work one of these times. That's I'm going to keep running it. And so and that's what you have. And so you see success and you see average.
Yeah.
That's the great James E. Hedebo over Nickelback. Speaking of Nickelback, 832-430-2946, 832-430-2946. Caller number 11. You're going to win a pair of tickets to see Nickelback on September 4th at Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion, courtesy of our friends at Live Nation. If you don't win, go to livenation.com. Live Nation always getting you to the hottest events around Houston. James, always a pleasure. What's going on with the Kitty Academy?
Man, I appreciate it, guys. It's always good hanging out
you
with
you.
You
were on fire today, by the way.
He's been on fire every day.
Yeah, he is.
That. But no, Kitty Academy League City West and Kitty Academy League City East, as well as Lakes of Savannah, they're doing very well. You know, I just want to give a shout-out because we have a phenomenal staff, man. It allows me to do what I do here.
Awesome.
And every other facet that we have going on. And we have a great team that keeps the programs running sharp for our kiddos. So thank you to them.
Knock it out of the park, as
James
always.
James Ehedebo, always a pleasure to have you in. Super Bowl champ, fire-spitting James Ehedebo, former teammate of Aaron Chico Hernandez. Also a former teammate of James Ehedebo and Aaron Hernandez, Tom Brady. Could Tom Brady be reuniting with another teammate and playing on a new team? It seems to make sense, and it might suck for the Texans. Around the NFL next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.